Well, as always, I want to thank everyone for being here. Betsy, thank you for being here. Dr. Castillo, thank you for being here. We have several staff members, principals. So thank everyone for being here, for making your evening available during the week. I want to just start off as we normally do with reciting our mission and our values. So I wanted to see if Danielle was open to doing that for us. So if you
happy to. Great, well, you want me to do both the mission and the values?
That would be fantastic.
Okay, happy to. Okay, our mission: to reimagine public education in low-income communities of color, to prepare conscious, critical thinkers who are equipped to graduate from college and create a more equitable and sustainable world. And our values are justice, we examine bias, racism, prejudice, we deliver culturally responsive curricula, we succeed when students' race and class cease to predict their level of achievement, community, we care, we collaborate, we respect the rights and voices of our stakeholders, curiosity, we question, we explore, we innovate, sustainability, we think globally and act locally, we adapt, we encourage systems thinking to create a sustainable future. Can I ask someone who's sharing screen to scroll down a little? Thank you. And leadership, we listen, we think critically, we advocate, we shift public discourse, we are our own superheroes.
Thank you so much, Danielle. And for those of you like Dr. Castillo who may not have been on previous calls or in meetings, and for those guests who are new, that's something that we do at the start of each board meeting. So thank you again, Danielle. So with that, we are recording. And so Sarah, if you can scroll up to the start of the agenda, that would be fantastic.
I am actually the person who's sharing screen today. Thank you all for your patience with me. In the absence of Jeremiah, I will be filling in a couple of roles.
Okay, so I did notice that Denise just joined, so we do have the full board and including Betsy, so thank you. Can you scroll to the beginning? That'd be fantastic. Okay, so just wanted to make sure, Sarah, that you are recording attendance and you see all those who are on the call. Once again, we have all the board members in attendance right now, including Dr. Betsy Hamilton, so thank you. With that, I'd like to call the meeting to order. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda.
Zena, thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
I second.
And that would be who?
Madhu.
Madhu, thank you, Madhu. Okay, I'll just go through. Ken.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Huey.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
And Betsy.
Aye.
Anthony is an aye. We have approved the agenda. Thank you. And with that, I will turn it over to Farnaz.
Thank you so much. We're going to begin with an opener. We only have 5 minutes for this. I want to apologize in advance. We got a lot of feedback from board members that you'd like it if our board meetings could be an hour and a half. And we tried, but failed to achieve that goal. Given the fact that we have our board meetings pretty sparsely right now, and we're in distance mode, unfortunately, they are going to be a little bit longer for a while. So I just wanted to apologize in advance for that. We want to take a moment to bring the joy of school back into the space as we're thinking about how to bring our kids back in on campus. And I wanted you guys to think for about 30 seconds about a special memory you have from your time in school and what made it special. So with that, I'm going to give you 30 seconds and then I'll put you in breakout groups with 2 to 3 people you can share. And then if a few people want to share their special memories with the whole group, that would be great.
I accidentally left the room in the middle of talking.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, well. Were you all in the main room? Is that where you were?
I was in a breakout with Zena and Charity, but it said to leave the room. Are we the only ones here? No, huh?
Well, now others are coming back in. But.
We're coming back, y'all.
Hey, Dee.
Hi. How are you?
Great, thanks.
So good to see you. You're like right front and center on the Brady Bunch screen.
Oh, dear. I should look down.
No, that's good. That's a good thing. Oh, now everyone's back. I'm so sorry, Kennedy and Farnaz, that I cut out. You're on mute, Kennedy.
No problem.
I said, you dissed us.
I know, I didn't mean, I always, that darn button. So sorry. I wasn't really saying anything that important anyway. And I was,
thank you all so much for taking a minute to share. I was wondering if 2 or 3 people wanted to share special memories with everyone before we jump into the agenda.
Well, I was invited to share because I'm an outsider, and that's no. Just a quick, when I was in high school, our class was selected to study French. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. My father was fluent in Spanish, and he couldn't understand why would they teach you French in San Antonio, Texas. But anyway, I loved it, and I was telling the ladies, Beth and Danielle, one day we were singing the national anthem to France, and I was really in it. I didn't realize everyone had turned off their earphones except for me. And I was just belting out this national hymn to France. I'm still embarrassed.
Thank you for sharing, Dr. Barnes. Would one other person be willing to share?
I will share. This is Janina. I had Charity and Zena share some really wonderful stories. Charity was mentioning a math teacher that was always very challenging and, you know, providing these complicated math questions that she would solve. And unfortunately, there was one incident where the question was solved, but apparently not to the teacher's liking. And, you know, Charity took that to heart and carries that with her, hopefully. You know, she mentioned that just that was just not the right thing to do, of course. Zena was also sharing that she was part of the news in ninth grade, was part of the newspaper, and her instructor went ahead and invited the group to a ballet, which was very memorable.
Thank you all so much for sharing. I appreciate it. We're going to jump back into the agenda for the meeting, and that is here. Thank you all.
Okay, so first and foremost, are there any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? Okay, are there any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay, then with that, I will turn it back to Farnaz.
Thank you. So I'm going to jump into this presentation and try, it's going to bring a couple of our presentations together. I shared this link with most of you prior to this meeting. In this strategic priorities lineup here, if you were to click on that, you would be able to access our strategic priorities benchmark chart. The good news is that I don't really need to go deeply into the strategic priorities benchmark chart at the moment. I'm happy to report that we're really looking good on several of our benchmark, most of our benchmark goals. Our attendance is doing better than mostly anywhere else I've spoken to. We have high levels of engagement. We're meeting many of our goals. So we're really proud of what we're doing with the benchmark chart, and it's continued to be a great resource for us in ensuring that we're meeting the goals that we're setting. But I welcome you guys to take some time at your own leisure, click on the strategic priorities document. And if you have any questions for me, don't hesitate to reach out. Two things I'll point out is I think when looking at the strategic priorities, it's really not realistic to select more than two priorities in a given year, especially in a year like this. So we had three priorities at the start of this year: to confront anti-Blackness and racism, to adjust for distance learning, and then our RA priority associated with a focus on math. And, you know, it's a lot to spread our staff and our leadership thin on multiple priorities like this in a year when we're also seeking to expand and we're going through a pandemic. So the reality of this is just something that I think has taken a toll on our staff and our leadership, and something that I hope that we can try not to do in future years and really push ourselves to select two priorities max. Also at this time, our distance learning priority is shifting quickly to our path back to campus priority. And that's something that we'll be talking about at length later in this meeting. We've been doing a lot of communication. So you'll see that there's a goal associated with communication on the strategic priorities benchmark chart, which is really something to hold me accountable. I partner with Cami on this goal significantly. We provide all the site leaders with biweekly communication templates from the home office, and frequently send newsletters that you guys receive and communications that you all receive. We've been surveying pretty regularly. And then Cami has innovated this amazing Path Back to Campus email that she sends now to all staff on a weekly basis, which provides really a lot of research and data on what's happening throughout our neighboring communities, but also throughout the country and coming back to campus. So it's been a sort of a data-rich conversation that she's providing. It doesn't feel like it's selling anything or has any biases. It's just making sure that we're all approaching this conversation in a consistent manner. I want to take a moment to thank this group of awesome human beings who have been extremely hardworking and diligent in getting all of our staff vaccinated. We are so grateful for our partnership with Lawndale Elementary School District that they gave us access to a number of their slots at the Beach Cities Health District. The CCSA has given us lots of slots, as has LACO. Dr. Castillo, thank you. They've been a tremendous resource in this partnership. And then also Geneva gave access to, through her husband's organization, Community Coalition, to a lot of vaccination opportunities. But it was actually almost like looking at election results this month. Every time people would let us know that they've got an appointment, we would take them off our spreadsheet and then send out more and more opportunities. I think we sent more than 20 opportunities, and we are very close to 80% of our team being at least having completed their first vaccination. Others plan to get vaccinated in some time, either because they're in early, you know, going through pregnancy or breastfeeding, like they wanted to hold off a little more. And some people are, you know, just like the general population, holding off in general. So, but I think this is a really good start, and we are grateful that people are feeling safer as a result of it. We've been doing a lot to try to improve the supports that we're providing for staff. So right now we have a counseling opportunity through a partnership with South Bay Children's Health Center for group counseling for staff. And we've divided it between all staff opportunities and opportunities for parents. And I interviewed a whole bunch of counseling partners and found a really affordable mechanism for doing this. And they are going to be doing this for the remainder of the year. And if we get positive feedback, we can do more because it's really affordable. On top of that, right now we've split up between parents and non-parents, but if there's another subgroup of staff that would benefit from this in a different iteration, we're open to that as well. I want to encourage you to click on this link that says the link to the ECS page. We've developed a phenomenal partnership with South Bay Families Connected that has created our own website page with hundreds and hundreds of resources for our families. And it's really exciting because I was there when this organization, Families Connected, was launched in Manhattan Beach. And now they're supporting 20 districts and schools, and we're one of them. So it's very exciting. We also have launched a partnership with Chrysalis. Some of you may remember I worked there for many years as the VP of programs. They primarily focus on serving homeless families and individuals, but right now, because they're doing web-based supports, they're providing supports to a lot of people in different socioeconomic brackets. They just reported back to me that 15 of our parents have signed up for supports and are meeting with their employment specialists on a regular basis. And we have had sessions in English and Spanish, and we had about 10 people at the Spanish speaking session. So it's very exciting that it's taking off. In terms of data management, I wish I could see all the principals' faces when we share this. This is a huge achievement. Yesterday, Robert and I met with our partner at Tableau, and we negotiated a new partnership with them. So they're going to be giving all of our core teachers access to the Tableau viewer licenses. So they'll be able to see everything. And for just a slight 20% increase, we're able to move from 20 licenses on Tableau to 70, so that a much broader audience of our teachers and staff will be able to see this, which is really exciting. And it, I wanna thank Robert, who's sitting in ground control in this picture. I took the picture of him as soon as our meeting was done. We were very excited. So he prepared it and I negotiated hard and it went well. This is a picture of food that our families have been making together via a partnership between Woodcraft Rangers, our after school program, and this business called One Potato, that's sort of like Blue Apron or some of these other food providing companies. Well, they have been partnering with our after school program to deliver meals to more than 100 families for two meals a week. And the families cook together and eat together. And this is a quote from one of our Englewood families that they shared. During these difficult times, we've been very grateful for the One Potato program because it's provided our family with healthy organic meals, and the cooking club has brought us together as a family. So it's really sweet to see how an after-school program has evolved to both meet the needs of a family and a community, and is also like really exciting for these kids. And like, how do we keep what's amazing about this distance learning time and the impact that it's having on our families is just one of the things we're thinking about a lot. I wanna take a moment to celebrate Allison Diaz. She was recently awarded again for 2 years in a row by CCSA, first as an amazing leader last year, and now for the Legacy Award for her phenomenal ability to do succession planning and hand off leadership to a large group of individuals. So I just want to take a moment to appreciate you, Allison. You're a phenomenal leader who's handed off in the most gracious and kind way possible, and you support me more than I could ever say. So a very well-deserved award. I want you guys to know that we're continuing to be engaged in advocacy. Both Allison and I serve on different committees of CCSA, which is really great. I'm on the statewide member council. Allison's on the LA County Council. And we've been engaging in a lot of advocacy efforts. But I also wanted to take a moment to appreciate our partnership with LACO. both Delia and Indra, who's the director of the charter school office, have made this effort to really fill the gap in knowledge for charter schools this year. As the pandemic began, charter schools weren't really invited to the superintendent sessions. And I've been really blessed to get notes from Dr. Hamilton whenever she can provide them. And I've been so grateful for that. But I really want to appreciate LACO because they've had sessions specifically for charter schools. And they've really addressed all of our questions on a weekly basis and provided space for advocacy. So it's been a phenomenal partnership. And we're very grateful for both LACO and LESD and CCSA for the advocacy support. We finished our six sessions, the roots and soil sessions, with Dr. Candace Watson and Dr. Tiffany Marie, which we're really proud of and grateful for. If you have some time and want to look back at prior soil sessions, we have this internal website here that you can look at these videos. If you don't have access to it for any reason and you want it, Jeremiah can give you access. I just wanted to bring you into what's happening next. I am going to be reaching out to all of the Black staff throughout the organization to create space for healing and renewal and to really hear about their experience working at ECS. We're going to have more affinity group spaces in May for Black staff. And then we're also going to be bringing parents into the process, as we talked about during the sessions, with info sessions in May for both Black parents and for our general parent population. So there's room for us to continue to have conversations and collect data and think about how do we approach this work next year and how does it continue to evolve. Tracy is going to be doing a great presentation on our salary increases. We have to increase salaries for basically all of our certificated staff based on shifts in policies associated with minimum wage. As you may know, everyone who is an exempt employee has to earn twice what minimum wage is. So that's going to be significantly impacting salaries for teachers across the state. Every school that we know is in the process of going through a process of reassessing their pay scale. That's happening. We're also planning to do a 3% from last year plus a 2% for this year cost of living adjustment for classified staff. And we're going to be doing a pretty serious comp analysis for leadership roles, which we'll present to you at the next board meeting, because as you shift all of the certificated staff members, you have to shift up a lot of the leadership roles because there starts to become an overlap. But on top of that, we have been below the mark as it relates to some of our leadership roles, and we need to sort of make sure that we remain competitive so that we can retain this phenomenal group of leaders. So stay tuned for that. We're going to be doing a study session today that's going to really focus on our path back to campus. We're going to look at parent survey data and staff data and talk about student needs. I want to remind you guys of some of the conversations we had early on in this year about the role of board members here. I really hope that you guys can continue to urge us to be as effective as we can be to meet the needs of our students and families and to ask critical questions of us in this process. We're also going to be, after this board meeting, reaching out to board members to see if there's anybody who'd be willing to serve on a committee to approve exceptions for staff. So if staff members are not wanting to return to on-site campus, many other organizations are using a board committee to approve exceptions to that. So we'll be able to approve a majority of the accommodations through the human resources element, but a subcommittee of the board would then approve additional exceptions, and we'll reach out and ask for that support. So with that, I'm going to hand off to Allison for the ECHS Gardena update.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for your cheers, and none of it would be possible without the amazing team that we have here. So this is really an award that is for all of us. So, okay, ECHS Gardena. Enrollment. We have been working diligently to get enrollment to where it needs to be for the fall. We have 104 students that have accepted spaces for next school year. There are also 25 students that are still, that are new applications that have come in after the deadline. We will be moving to accept those students once we hit the lottery deadline of April 1st, which will hopefully bring us to a full class of enrollment of 120 plus students, so that we will even have some extra students. So we expect to be fully enrolled. We also have a plan to build our waiting list. And to add to that, 67 out of the 104 applicants have already completed their enrollment packets, which is really incredible, because that normally doesn't happen until maybe June. So that they're already completing those enrollment packets. And I've been working with our new principal, who you'll be meeting in a little bit, to talk about their first orientation with her. And on, in addition to enrollment, I've also been working on our building, which is the next key piece to opening up a new charter school. And we are working very hard to ink the final deal with the church that is located on 2818 Manhattan Beach Boulevard. I've now committed the address to memory. This space is 2 acres. It will be for the entire campus. It has over 100 parking spots. It will have 20 classrooms. It will have a multi-purpose room that can be converted to a gym space and volleyball and basketball courts. And our goal is to spend no more than $2,100 per student to support the space. And so we will be, once Menlo Charter Properties works out the final deal, we will be entering into a lease agreement with Menlo Charter Properties to lease the space for about $2,100 per student, with that being less in years 1, 2, and 3, and ramping up to the $2,100 per student in year 4 and 5, making it very affordable.
Allison, if I may just ask a question regarding the board and their participation in the purchase and once approved by MCP, is there any involvement, or what involvement exists with the board in relation to that?
So for ECHS's board, ECHS's board would approve the lease arrangement with MCP. And it will be, we'll need to go on the next board agenda to approve that lease arrangement and to agree that this makes sense. And we may need a special meeting to do that between now and our next board meeting.
Allison, I'm
begging for Nas to have a special meeting.
Allison, I also had a question about the students in terms of enrollment. How many came from the ECS schools?
So, really important question. I don't know the exact count, but I would say it's close to 90% of the 104 students that are coming from our middle schools, with the majority of them coming from our Gardena site. But there are several students coming from our Inglewood site as well. And I know that the families who have communicated directly, I don't know if Dave is on right now, because I don't see all the images of everybody, but if Dave is on and wants to chime in, I know that he was very excited that his families felt so supported through the process and that they had a space, and they're so excited about the year ahead. And so they've communicated with him about that excitement and with enthusiasm that we're opening this school. And so it's really helped build and inspire all of us to keep working hard for them. Good question, Zena.
So with that, we're super excited to introduce Dr. Cindy Guardado, who's our new principal who's coming into the Gardena site. And Cindy is here with us today. Today is her official first day with us. And I'd like to invite Cindy to introduce herself and share a little about herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cindy. It's really great to be a part of the team. I am definitely excited. This is the place to be. I've had the chance to meet Farnaz and Allison in person, as well as Sarah. I cannot stress how welcomed I felt this last 2 days and actually throughout the interview process, even though it was very intentional. I've really got a sense of who ECS is as an org and the love and passion that it's in place to support the students. I have been in education for more than 10 years. I started off as a teacher's assistant as soon as I graduated high school. And by then I already knew that I wanted to be a teacher because I had been tutoring a middle school student. And I really enjoyed just those like small aha moments when I was teaching her English and math and really just supporting her with homework. And I just went through the ropes, earned my bachelor's in English, my master's in curriculum and instruction, and earned my credential in English. And then I just kind of just decided to continue going to school. I don't think that there is a better way to be a role model for our community than to be exactly what we're asking for. And so I have a very strong family sense. My mother is my biggest hero. And so I kind of lead with that love and that compassion. And professionally and educationally, I come with the understanding and the example of just like, it is doable. It doesn't matter how challenging it gets along the way. We are here to support you, to guide them through the challenges, to show them the ropes, and to kind of just be their biggest cheerleader as we are, as we go through high school with them. So I'm very excited to be a part of the ECS team now.
Thank you, Cindy. We're so grateful to have you here as part of the team.
Thank you. Yes, welcome.
Thank you.
So with that, I hand off to Danielle for an update on testing.
Thank you and welcome, Cindy. I'm excited to connect. So I just have a quick update about summative testing. Some of you may already be aware of the shifting, changing landscape of summative testing this year. So I'm just going to go through a couple of slides and give you some high level info. So the big question that we had going into this year is, was there going to be a blanket waiver for summative testing like we had last year? And the answer is no. And that came from the U.S. Department of Education back in the fall with the previous administration. And that same guidance was reiterated with the new administration. But the new administration said there would be something called testing flexibility. There was a lot of clarity about what that meant, but that clarity has emerged a little bit more now. Our plan from a big picture for you all is we're going to be administering remote testing to the preponderance of students. For those students for whom remote testing doesn't work for a variety of reasons, like they have IEP accommodations, they don't have an environment at home that's conducive to testing, they don't have technology that supports it, or any of those types of things, we will be offering in-person accommodations. Like kids can come on campus to take the test, but we expect that the preponderance of students will test remotely. And also parents have the right to opt out if for some reason that's not gonna work for them this year, that is also their right. We're gonna be testing in grades 6, 7, and 8, 8 and 11 in math and ELA, and that's what we normally do. But the thing that is to be determined is what will the test be? And that's what we're still waiting on from the California Department of Education. it will likely be NWEA or SBAC, which is what we are accustomed to. Both of those tests we're familiar with, and we even have some experience with remote testing in both NWEA and SBAC from this year. And the other test that's going to be happening this spring is the LPAC for all English learners. And then there's more guidance here, and Farnaz, I understand that the board has access to this, this presentation. If you want to learn more about testing flexibility and what that means, could you go back one more slide? It's okay. The information on this slide is what's coming, what came out of last week's State Board of Education meeting. And what is going into the California, like the state is applying to the U.S. Department of Education for this type, these elements of a waiver. And this is the part, this page here is talking about the testing flexibility. And that's why I don't know yet if we're going to do NWA or SBAC, because I'm waiting for word and it might be coming this week. the next slide tells you about the other things that are in the state board's application for a waiver to the U.S. Department of Ed, which includes an extended testing window, a waiver from the science test, so that's why I didn't mention that earlier, and a waiver to decouple accountability for assessments from assessments and to eliminate the normally required 95% participation rate. All that is to say, that's a lot of technical stuff, but what it means for ECS is the stakes are lowered a little bit for standardized testing. We can use the results that come out of spring testing to give us information about where students are and to help us plan for what happens in the spring. But the temperature is lowered a little bit in terms of the stakes, and that helps a lot.
Thank you, Danielle. So with that, I just want to open up to any questions or needs that any board members or anyone on the staff want to identify at this time, if there are any. And I can't see you when I'm sharing, so I'm going to stop sharing for a moment. Any questions? Okay, excellent. So with that, Julie, do you want to share your screen or do you want me to share my screen?
I'm happy to share.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening, everyone. So great to see all of you. I'm here to share our fund development update for March. And so this is a snapshot of our fundraising goal this year. So for board members, this sort of breakdown is familiar to you. And so just to sort of recap, our general fund fundraising goal for this year, 2021, is $444,000. And what we have traditionally done in the last few years is also build in a goal for future years so that we're going into our next school year with, you know, a little bit of a buffer. So that's $600,000 that we've set as our future year's goal. And then this year in particular, we have $2 million of the total $5 million that we would like to fundraise for ECHS Gardena for a total of $3 million. A little more than $3 million. So our development status report, and again, this is linked on the presentation with the breakdown of all these individual fields. So you'll see the breakdown between 2021, as well as future year's budget and our total fundraising goal. And then at the bottom, the two rows in red, break down our total raise, grand total raise towards the goal. So to date, we raised $1.3 million, give or take, and we have about $1.7 left that we're looking to raise. So each of those rows will give you a little bit detailed breakdown. Again, it is also linked in the development dashboard. just a visual representation of our progress to date in terms of general fundraising. So again, our general fundraising goal is really to support all of the general sort of programming and instructional program that our students have access to. And then, of course, our capital campaign, we've raised about $709,000 to date. So our grant secured for 2021, these are some of our larger grants is, I won't read through them, but just a snapshot of what has come in as well as has been secured for this particular school year. And then the last few weeks have been pretty busy for our development team and our home office. And so we've submitted a number of grants to existing as well as new funding partners. So I wanted to also make note of Every Child Foundation. So if you're familiar with Every Child Foundation, they have historically, the way in which they award is they historically have given $1 million to one organization. In the last 2 years, they shifted their focus to give $250,000 to four instead. And so we have moved into their final round with our submission. And so it looks very promising. We had some really positive calls and we're the first charter school that they're considering for this gift. And then our charter school growth fund submission went in last week. We just found out this week that we have been invited to be a finalist or a semi-finalist. So we are scheduling a site visit with them, virtual, of course. I'm very, very excited. And this funding opportunity would directly support our effort, our capital goal effort for ECHS Gardena. So mutual aid. So we've shared a little bit about this, but for folks who are newer to this discussion, again, you know, spring of 2020, when we were seeing the impact of COVID on all of our families, again, a team of teacher leaders at our high school spearheaded a mutual aid campaign, and they raised a significant amount of money to support our families through mini grants. And so as an organization, we made a commitment to continue supporting this effort. And through that, we've been able to bring in additional dollars through our partnerships with Connecta, with the Change Reaction, and have established an angel fund, which essentially continues to support our families' critical needs during this time. And so to date, we've been able to disperse about more than 50,000 to our families across all three school sites. And what this supports has been such as utilities, grocery cards, Visa cards to support household expenses, and critical one-time emergency needs. So we're very grateful to our families. And I also want to give a shout out to all of the site teams, the folks, community liaison, our office managers, and folks who have been really holding this effort for our families. And it takes a significant amount of work. And we recognize that, you know, what we're really doing is case management. And we're really supporting our families in this way, something that we historically have not done. And so just wanted to recognize that additional effort. And then our capital campaign. So all of you know we've been spearheading these sessions, these informational sessions. It's been going splendidly. Thank you so much to all of our board members, our directors and staff who have been inviting folks, have been encouraging, have been attending them yourself. You know, as the slide shares, we've done more than 20 presentations to a number of individuals, have followed up with folks, have had some really amazing conversations during the Zoom space. I would say, you know, I'll speak on behalf of Farnaz, that it's incredibly inspiring for us to be able to share about our work and get that feedback from folks, especially people who are not very familiar with ECS. You know, and so, you know, we hear this in every space that we're in which people share that, you know, I wish I had known about this, and there's so many needs, and what you're doing is really important work. And so another exciting piece is of the people that we've spoken to, there have been a number that have been excited and want to join our Growth and Sustainability Committee. And so we have Portia Cohen, former mayor of Manhattan Beach, who's leading our committee, and then a number of committee members who are amazing individuals in their own right and who are really excited to help support this effort. And again, if for board members who have been sharing, thank you again. We, Farnaz and I just met, will be sending out additional dates through the end of May. And so we'll have a few more sessions for you to invite folks to. So thank you. And then the last shout out is just ECS in the media. And so I think I may have mentioned the KCRW before, but you know, we're so grateful that even in the midst of the pandemic and distance learning that, you know, we're still getting a lot of shine for our work. And so Tashonda, our Green Ambassadors teacher at Inglewood, was interviewed on KCRW about, you know, Green Ambassadors, and she spoke about, you know, the challenges of distance learning, but also the opportunities that that creates. And then, of course, our very own Chief Academic Officer, Danielle Kelsick, was recognized as a leader to learn from Ed Week. And so if you haven't seen it, I can definitely send out the link so you can read more about it. And that's it for me. Does any, do we have any questions? All right, thanks.
Thank you, Julie. I won't share my screen yet because what's next is Dorothy's financial presentation. So Dorothy, do you want to share your screen or do you want me to share it?
I can share if it works. I had some issues earlier, but I'll try right now.
And I can. Thank you, Julie, so much for that amazing presentation. It's so exciting to see how far we've come in this year. Thank you.
Okay, yay, it worked. So there are a number of updates. Let me minimize this. So at the beginning of the month, the governor signed Senate Bill, Assembly Bill 86, and that includes $2 billion for schools to go back to in-person instruction, as well as the money we'll talk about on the next slide. But this $2 billion is, so for the high school in Lawndale, it's about $200,000. For the middle school in Gardena, it's $118,000. And then for the middle school in Inglewood, it's $124,000. So that amount, I just said it's an estimate, but it's also dependent on the school starting offering the in-person instruction by April 1st. And you have to, you know, follow all of their, you know, the criteria by May 15th, otherwise you lose this grant. And then for every day you're not open after April 1st, not including spring break, you get a 1% deduction to the grant. There are some requirements, you know, when they're in person, it does require a certificated employee to be supervising them, but there is flexibility where there is no minimum number of days you have to do this or a specific number of minutes that they have to be there. You do have to offer this instruction continuously until the end of the year. Otherwise you lose the entire grant. It does require the COVID safety plan. And then at beginning of June, we report to the CDE just what day the school ended up opening so that they know how much to send later in the summer to however much the grant has changed. There's a lot more to this, which I'm sure will be covered later. The second part of that bill was for $4.6 billion, and it's called for the Expanded Learning Grant, and it's mainly for to address learning loss mitigation. You know, so for how much is allocated to the schools, which are estimates, the high school is $430,000. Gardena is $250,000, and then Inglewood is $260,000. You have to spend it on most of it on in-person instruction. There is a pot that is reserved for paraprofessionals. You will be hearing a lot more about this because it does require a narrative and expense plan that has to be board approved before June 1st. And we have more than a year to spend this money. And then we're just kind of waiting to find out a little bit more from the CDE on some of these things. And there are going to be audit requirements where anything does happen and the auditors want to issue a finding, the school has to pay back the money. So that was the state money that the schools will be receiving. There's also some federal money. So there's ESSER II, which was part of the CERSA Act that Congress approved at the end of September. And there's also ESSER III, which was part of the American Rescue Plan, which was approved earlier this month. So they're pretty much you can use for the same things, anything related to the pandemic, for learning loss, facility repairs to improve ventilation, you know, mental health, you know, cleaning supplies, PPE. And just to give you some scope, these are all of the funding sources that have been allocated to the schools. And they were based on, you know, the basis for the funding were different requirements depending on where it's coming from. And then the next three slides also apply, you know, exactly how much is estimated for each school and the fiscal years that we're planning to use the money. This slide, the first one I showed you, this covers all the years you are allowed to use the money. So that's the difference between the shading on this general slide and then each individual slide. And just so you know, the two rows for the ABS B86 money, the reason why we have it over 2 years is because we're waiting for further guidance on like which year we have to show it. So that may be shifting. But you can see the ESSER-3 is the biggest amount for the schools, and that is the one that was recently approved. So there will be a lot of planning on how exactly that will be spent. Any questions on this part before we move into the current fiscal year?
I had a question. I think in your first slide, when you were talking about that we have to do like provide, you know, COVID safety plan required, like how much of that budget that you get for each school goes towards the safety part, not including like the certified employee supervision and all the other things. Like, is there a percentage that we have to use for COVID safety?
It is not a requirement in terms of using the grant. All of those buckets from here you can use on like PPE and cleaning. Mm-hmm. So kind of depends where you want to code that invoice and spending it down.
Okay. And then further, when you were talking about money with supplemental supports, like what does like supplemental instruction and supports in this one where the expanded learning opportunities, like what qualifies? Does that mean like outdoor education falls under supplemental instruction and supports? Do we know that, or we're still just trying to figure that out?
That I actually can't remember if the CD or the bill was specific on it.
It had some restrictions from what I remember, Dorothy, but it really focused on a lot of after school programming, summer camp instruction, summer school education. And it could include outdoor education, but it did have some elements of that focused on what they refer to as learning loss mitigation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Fernandez.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, so we'll move to Lawndale. So their operating income since the last time you saw it has gone up by $240,000. Most of that was from savings in technology services. There was some additional revenue. There was a field trip reimbursement and then a workers' comp and health benefit rebate. You'll see this workers' comp and health benefit rebate at each of the schools. And then you also see the federal revenue go up at each of the schools. It was for some extra CARES Act money for meals that happened from last year. And then there was a small bucket of savings from the home office. And I'm going to skip these slides because we talked about it in finance committee and to also save some time because I know Tracy has to, I'm sharing my time with Tracy. And then for Gardena, the operating income went up by $39,000. That local revenue is the same for the rebates. compensation and benefits. There are some savings with some teachers on leave, but that's slightly offset with the increase in services and other operating for additional substitutes. The federal revenue increase was for the CARES Act money. And then there was some additional money with local control funding. There was a slight correction with ADA, so you are getting an extra $13,000. But overall, I mean, the school is planning to end around $57,000. So for Inglewood, their changes, you know, overall was about by $20,000 better. So their local revenue, that's that workers' comp health rebate, their federal revenue is for that CARES reimbursement. And then they had some increase in services and other. That's mainly for some prior year expenses, higher internet expenses, and some marketing, which were offset by some home office savings. So for the high school in Gardena, we did have a number of changes. So the main one was really that we added the Welton grant to this year. We had been planning it for next year. So the expenses will really just happen next year. The other changes in the comp benefits, services, and the federal revenue is really the shift of for that the federal grant moving expenses from this year to next year. So it's not really a true, you know, they're not really going to look, you know, $492,000 better. It's just shifting of expenses for the federal grant. And then we're recognizing the Welton grant now instead of next year. And then in terms of cash, you can see all the schools have strong balances. They do have a dip in the spring because of the deferrals where the state is holding cash and then repaying them later. What is missing from this cash flow is the two grants we talked about, the AB SB 86. The schools will be receiving 50%, a 50% payment in May. So that's not in here. And then any disbursements for ESSER 2 or 3 are also not in here either. I'm not really clear on when ESSER money would be coming, but ESSER, if I had to guess, I would say maybe you get ESSER 2 money in June and probably you won't see ESSER 3 money this fiscal year. Any questions?
Okay. Just gonna jump in and call to attention. We're running a little behind on time. So wherever we can cut out little bits, that would be awesome just for the presenters, if you could consider that, please. I think what's next here is
the compensation analysis.
Do you want me to share, Tracy, or do you want to?
If it's easy for you to share, that'd be great. And either way.
Thank you so much, Dorothy.
Right, so Farnaz kind of introduced this, so hopefully I can go quickly. The California minimum wage has been increasing, and as a result, there's an exempt employee requirement of twice the minimum wage that is increasing quite a bit each year for us. So as a result of this, we are going to need to increase parts of our salary schedule to adjust up to the 2022 cap, because of course next year flows into 2022. And also it's come to our attention that everybody is doing this right now. So it's for several reasons that we want to do this. First of all, to be compliant. Secondly, to be competitive. And finally, to value our teachers the way we do. They're amazing. They're going back to school soon. And we want to recognize that. So here you can see our current salary schedule. And then on the next slide is the draft that we're proposing for approval here. So you can see that the lowest step and column there is the 2022 exempt minimum wage for an 11-month employee. And we bump it up by column based upon their level of education and their licensing, of course. The final column, sped counselor, they work 12 months rather than 11 months. So we reflect that in their pay. And also there is a slight bump in overall wage to account for the fact that they have a higher level credential or a credential that takes more time in school. And they also have a greater student load than our typical teachers. And you can see that the steps from years 2 through 10 are effectively a 2% COLA for our teachers. And then starting in year 11 and 12, it bumps up to 3%. That's because of the prior year salary schedule. We had to do that or they would be making less than they would have been. And then starting in years 14 through 20, the COLA decreases. And that is the main change, I would say, from the prior schedule, other than dollar amounts, is that in the prior schedule, those teachers in years 14 through 20 were frozen in their pay for 2 to 3 years. And in this salary schedule, we adjusted it so that they do get a bump every year. And that's because we actually have some teachers that are in that range now. And it just feels a bit off to not give a raise when all your colleagues are getting raises, right? So that is the main philosophical difference, I would say, in the two. You can see over to the right, the expected, sorry for one more point, is just the expected increase in cost in fiscal year 21-22 as a result of this. And, you know, again, Dorothy's presented a lot and all of the additional funding that we're getting in the next several years. So we feel confident that the schools can bear this cost increase. On slide 7, you can see here a histogram of where our teachers fall in that salary schedule. Close to 80% of our teachers are in that year 1 through 10 area. So a lot of our teachers are going to really see a nice increase from this change. And then the next couple of slides are just talking about what we're going to present to you in the future, which is we're looking at our administrator pay and our para-ed pay, and we're going to be benchmarking and making sure that we're competitive across charter organizations and also making sure that we have consistent pay and compensation across our sites, especially as we're starting a new site. We need to kind of align everything for our paras. Are there any questions? I'm sorry for the background noise. I have 2 small children. So any questions on any of that? All right.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Sorry. So with this, we are going to be going into a conversation, which is our path back to campus, which is a discussion study session. Danielle, do you want me to share the presentation or will you do so?
I'll share my screen. Thanks, Brenna. Okay, everybody, just give me a moment while I get that going. Okay, so can you give me a thumbs up if you're able to see my screen? Okay, great. All right, so I understand we're a little behind on time, so I'm gonna go a little faster and I'm gonna ask that Tammy and Beth jump in to help me out if I missed something important. And the one caveat I'll say is that
as you can see from the agenda and all of the presentations already given, and as well as the ones that are left on tonight's agenda, there's a lot going on at ECS these days. And we're moving at a fast pace, especially with the approach of spring break, which starts this Friday. So this is hot off the presses, and we're presenting it to you, board, as our first stakeholder group. And we really invite your feedback and your critical eye, because getting back to campus is really important for us as an organization, and important that we do it right. So let me proceed. So here's the gist of the presentation. We're going to talk big picture goals and vision. We're going to talk about our specific plan for this spring, and then I hope to leave some time for you to share ideas, questions, concerns. And one more kind of note that I'm going to, let me just do this. If you give me one moment, please. I'm going to share a document with you so that if, as I'm presenting, some questions come up, please feel free to type those questions into this document. You don't have to do that, but that this is just in case we don't have time to talk about all of your questions. I at least have your name and what you noticed that we can follow back up with you. So I put that in the chat, and if you need any help with access, please write back in the chat and I'll ask Beth or Cammie to help out with that. If you could just test it out, somebody type in it, make sure I gave you edit access before I jump in. I want to make sure I don't skip that stage. Are you able to type? Okay, I see some people type. So if you have any trouble, type it in the chat and Cammie or Beth will help you out. All right, now back to presenting. Hold on one moment. Okay, so big picture. Okay, so what are we talking about? We are talking about bringing students back to campus for in-person learning. And for us, there's a lot of significance there, because you can read this slide, but we think as an organization that the best learning happens when there's a meaningful human connection. When students are with their teachers who care about them and their well-being, their education, when students are part of a warm and loving community where learning is celebrated, where a student's academic growth supports their sense of self, their sense of identity and who they are. And so for us, we're really excited about returning to campus. We think it's gonna be a celebration, but we know it's also gonna be a time to acknowledge what has been lost. And just one note here, that's not to say that we haven't had meaningful connection during this year of distance learning. Our teachers have been incredibly innovative, and so have our leaders. So it's not to short shrift what has been accomplished this year, but it is just to say what we value more than anything is that meaningful human connection. And although you can do human connection via the computer screen, we think it's better when it happens in person. So we want to get kids back on campus. And besides it being tied to our values and what we believe is best for kids, we also know there's a justice component. The pandemic, as you all are well aware, has disproportionately impacted low-income communities of color, the communities that we serve at ECS. And you can read here, our families have experienced the greater levels of loss, risk, insecurity, and stress. And this graphic here kind of illustrates just the experience of being close to a victim of COVID-19. It varies greatly depending on your race. And this slide is showing you the average case rate across LA County compared to the community where our students live. There's a disparity between, you know, greater LA County and what are the communities where our students live. how many cases of COVID exist. And this is all coming from Cami's research that Farnaz referred to earlier. And also part of the why is when kids come to campus, we're able to not only connect with them and learn with them and have fun with them, but we get to just see what they need because we're there in physical space with them. And we get to connect them better to the resources. Although Farnaz talked really brilliantly about all of the connections and Julie too, all the connections and resources we've been able to do in this time, we think we can do better when they're in front of us physically. And we also know that students, like adults, benefit from structures, routines, rhythm of school. And there is dislocation and stress when we don't have those grounding structures in our lives. And it's particularly acute for our students and in this time. So here's the how. This graphic is depicting, you may have seen this graphic before, but it's sort of like our approach to returning to campus. How do you go from exclusively doing distance learning to eventually getting back to campus? The text, you can read it, but it's really saying that the way we're gonna do that is by listening to our stakeholders and doing this in a slow, methodical way that prioritizes health and builds in and is based on science, but then also builds in these pauses between stages where we can reflect and refine based on the feedback from participants. Right now, we have cleared to level three, and one of our schools, I think today, started level four. So we've gone from one-on-one adult and one student testing to small groups, to one small group, and then to multiple small groups. And now we're just getting regularly scheduled intervention groups underway. And there's a couple more stages you can see in this graphic before we get back to normal operations. And part of our plan to get back to campus is also informed not just by the case rates and what's going on in the pandemic and in LA and our values as an organization, but the learning that we've been doing this year around confronting anti-Blackness and racism. On the right are these four tenets that Dr. Kenjis Watson has introduced us to, and Dr. Tiffany Marie, that they call the four tenets of wellness. And they've been infused in a lot of the meetings and the conversations that we've had over the year. I have bolded ongoing healing because when I think about us going back to campus, that's a really critical feature of like healing, all kinds of healing that needs to happen as we move back to campus. And part of our plan is there's these design principles that are part of our plan. You can see them bulleted here. They're develop a community of care and healing. So as an extension of that ongoing healing that Kenjis and Tiffany convince us is part of wellness and a way to combat and confront anti-Blackness. But just because that's what we need. We need everyone to feel like they're cared for and feel like school is a place where we can start to heal. Another key feature of our plan to return is that we're building the system for change. So we're trying to build it so that it will adapt and change as the conditions change around us. And that's a big shift for a school. ECS loves innovation, but ECS is still a school or a group of schools that is used to a kind of annual rhythm of change. And this year, I think it's true for everyone and probably every industry, the rate of change, the cycle of innovation has accelerated at a rate that's really hard to keep up with, but we're trying to think about building intentionally for that type of change as we go into next year. And then, as I mentioned before, making sure that there is there's space and planned opportunities to reflect and refine based on stakeholder feedback. And sort of underlying all of this is this notion that as we reopen, it's got to be safe, it's got to be caring, it's got to be flexible, it's got to be sustainable. Let me pause for a second, Beth and Kimmy, anything you want to add that I missed?
No, I say keep going.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. I couldn't see you, so thanks for talking. Okay, so what's going to happen this spring? What are we thinking? So here's some current considerations that went into this plan. We recently surveyed staff and families, and what we found is, depending on how we ask the question, 1/3 to 2/3 of family and staff are willing to return to campus as of right now. What we are also considering, and I'll go into a little bit more of that in a moment, what we're also considering are student needs. What are students' acute needs? And what are the kind of just developmental needs of adolescents right now? And then what's our capacity? What's realistic for us, given that it is March with spring break next week and April coming soon thereafter? So this is an example from the family survey. I'll give you a moment to read this slide. So what you will notice probably is about 50% of families from each campus is not currently willing to send their students back to campus this spring. But when we ask the question a different way here, the percentage not willing shrinks considerably, and the percentage that are willing, if all safety steps are taken, increases a lot, and the percentage of people who are not sure also increases. So what that says to us is we've got to convince parents that it's safe and that it makes sense to return to send their kids back to school, but also that we shouldn't be expecting 100% of our students or families to want to send their kids back to school this spring. This is the staff survey. So this slide's here just to show you it's pretty representative there's equal participation from each site in terms of staff who filled out the survey. And I'll let you orient yourself to this data.
You've really been reading a lot.
So what we see here is when we ask the question about would you be willing to return to campus a one-on-one with a single student or with a small group, teachers are much more and staff are much more likely to say yes, for sure. When we say, would you be willing to come back with a larger group of up to 14 students, the number of staff members who are unwilling and unsure increases. So kind of big picture, zooming out is, again, depending on how we ask the question, about 32 to 67% of student parents are willing to send their kids back right now, and 37 to 55% of staff willing to come back. So that's kind of an interesting match, right? Like a similar percentage of families and staff interested in coming back right now. It gets tricky when you like try to match up the students in their grade level with the adults who teach them, right? It's not that simple. It's not as easy as you want to come back to campus, great, work with these teachers. Or maybe if we expand our thinking, maybe we could make that match a little better. So those are the kind of stakeholder voices. Student needs, which is coming from what teachers are telling us, what administrators are telling us, what students themselves are telling us, and families, are that we need tier 3 intervention supports to support kids in acute need right now, academically and socially, emotionally. We need to invest in community building as we come back, and kids need social connections, so do adults. This is another key finding from the survey. ECS educators resoundingly are telling us that remediating learning loss is not their top concern. This is interesting because if you're reading the news and you're following, there's all this talk about learning loss and remediation and accelerating, and the kids are going to be so behind when they come back. That's not what our teachers are telling us. That's not what some of the data is telling us either. Kids have learned this year. And just despite the odds against them, right? Or the assumptions that we make about their capacity to learn under duress, like they have learned this year. And so that's something to be proud of and to celebrate. And it also indicates to us that as we bring kids back to campus, as we think about this plan of reopening, that remediation is not the goal. Supporting connections, community, healing is the goal. Here's my mantra again. I'm trying to memorize it because it's part of what we have to say to ourselves over and over again. As we go back, it has to be safe, caring, flexible, and sustainable. You may have seen this graphic before. This was our path back as we were kind of thinking about the months left this year. It's already out of date. So here's the new version, the more up-to-date version. The biggest kind of thing for you to be aware of is that we went from thinking we would get to hybrid before this school year ends to saying, nope, our terminal goal for this year is gonna be weekly campus visits. And what that looks like and how we engineer that is part of what is on the plates of administrators right now. But based on all of that data, stakeholder feedback, the needs of students, this is the goal for this year so that we can go into next year with a goal of hybrid. And what we mean by hybrid is a mix of remote and in-person, but that happens on a regular basis, something like, you know, maybe 2 days a week that kids are coming back until it's safe to open up more broadly. Cammie, Beth, anything to add?
No, you're doing great. Keep going.
Okay. So a critical element is also safety. These are procedures that are already in place for the one-to-one small groups and the intervention groups that are starting. But as we increase the number of kids and adults that come back to campus, one, we've got to be just as diligent as we have been, but also the logistics of these safety layers gets more complicated. So these are our priorities for the spring. I'll let be quiet for a second, let you read. When we think about what is really possible, what we have the capacity for doing, and what will set us up for success as we reopen more broadly next year, these are the things that we think are doable. Focusing on safety is critical. Thinking about student needs and prioritizing student needs, especially the acute needs that are represented by the tier three intervention groups and the developmental needs represented by the weekly campus visits. Stakeholder engagement is key for that community of caring and healing that I talked about before. And building a foundation for hybrid, what comes next after this summer, is really critical too. So just a reminder, this is the path. We're still on this path, but we're going to pause at UC campus visits. That's our terminal goal for this school year. Everything that comes after that will follow after this school year ends. And then this is a timeline that just indicates a little bit more closely or in a little more detail what's going to happen month by month. And the real critical thing here is April is all about launching and getting ready for successful launch of weekly campus visits in May and for continuing the intervention groups that are starting now. June, we expect will be continued campus visits with enhancements. And the one other thing I want to say about May, where it says launch campus visits, those might not start, like it might be a soft launch, right? And the launch might look like one grade level. It might be, and it's going to depend on the numbers, right? Who's available, how many parents and kids want to send, that there's going to be some, it will take, we need an on-ramp to probably get to weekly campus visits, I think is what I'm trying to say. And it's got to be safe, caring, flexible, and sustainable. And now it's time for feedback. And I know that we're behind on time, so I had a little activity plan and we won't do that. So I just want to, I guess, hear from Farnaz about what we do have time for. We could take a pause and let people type into the document or articulate some questions and ideas out loud right now. I just don't know where
we're going. If I may jump in, and I've conferred with Farnaz, because as you stated, we have a lot going on at ECS, and we have a lot going on in the agenda this evening, that and we have to have a special board meeting for the MCP and the new high school, that we're going to take the closed session review and move it to that special board meeting so that we can give the time to the rest of the agenda today and still be on time and respect everyone's time.
Okay.
So unless disagrees with that approach, we'll move forward with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
So does that mean we have time for some processing and asking questions?
I think so, yes.
Okay, great. That sounds great. So actually, Anthony, can you tell me, or Farnaz, how much time? Because I could do this version or that version.
I think 15 more minutes, Danielle.
Yeah, 10 to 15 more minutes, I think, is appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so then let's pause, and I'm going to give everyone a chance to process. And you can process in a couple of different ways. I'll put a link to the document if you want to read the plan in detail. Pages 1 through 5 are kind of narrative form that will be useful to you. Or if you want to scroll through the presentation I just gave, that might be easier, it has visuals. So I'm gonna just give you these two artifacts. You can decide what to focus on and take about 5 minutes to peruse and to gather your thoughts. And then we're going to, we'll discuss, and we'll open it up for discussion. How does that sound? Okay, so let me put some links in chat for you all.
Danielle, I noticed that some people have started writing into the graphic organizer. Right. I'm wondering if it's important to you that people put their initials or their names next to it, or if you don't care.
Yeah, names would be great if you feel comfortable, because it will allow us to follow up with you later if needed. So here is, but if you don't feel comfortable, then you don't have to. That is a link to the presentation, which, hold on a second, you don't have access just yet. Sorry about that. Okay, that link should be live now. And then I'm also going to put in a link to the draft reopening plan. If you cannot open either of those links, please let me know. Let's take 5 minutes to process. Thank you.
2 more minutes. Okay, so that was 5 minutes. Thank you all for typing into that shared document. That's helpful. So I think what we're gonna do now is spend another 5 to 7 minutes having a little bit of discussion with the whole group. And what I see coming up in the notes, and please feel free to keep typing into that document if you wanna add anything or if something comes up while we're talking. But what I see is maybe two kind of themes coming up, which is a real kind of concern and set of questions about why is it that one, parents are hesitant to send kids back to school, and also why is UCS returning kids back to campus so slowly when other neighboring school districts have already begun. So I feel like we can talk about that. And then I also see a related concern or question around how are we communicating with parents and families? So let's just kind of open it up there. I'll let any one of board members, like if you want to articulate your concern or your question for me, that would be helpful. And then I'll ask folks part of the plan to help field questions.
I would be interested in sharing something if that's okay.
Please.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I just wrote something briefly about the design principles being a great guide. What strikes me about all of this, and this is not surprising to me at all, is that there's a great deal of thought and deliberation that's gone into this presentation, to the thinking behind it and the planning and clarity about who you are and what you stand for. And with regard to, and working in a school district where that is not, where there's been a tremendous amount of thinking and planning, but when an organization's true north is diverted by public or political pressure, that's problematic. And so, you know, why that's been a constant question. Each week I have a meeting with 11 other superintendents in the South Bay, and consistently the Western Corridor from Manhattan Beach to Palos Verdes have, you know, been pushing to open and have opened. And everyone on the Eastern Corridor from Inglewood down to Lawndale have not until now, until very recently. The other thing is just knowing who you are helps you, from my perspective, resist public pressures that may not be consistent with what you really want to see for yourselves and your students. And I keep saying, the last thing I'll say for now, is we all have to get to the other side of this and still protect the fabric of our community. And so right now, unfortunately, from my perspective, again, I'm only the superintendent, but we are moving forward with a plan that was with a plan that is creating a lot of disruption. So I think if what I want to endorse what you're doing, I think it's very well thought out, and it's not cautious, but it's very deliberate and purposeful from my perspective.
I would, can I jump in? Thank you, Betsy. What you say resonates with me in a lot of ways. I think for me, when we initially drew the path, like what are the steps to getting everybody back on campus? There were certain parts that seemed relatively simple to me, right? Like, we'll do distance learning and we'll just bring a few small groups on campus for interventions. That's all, that's not that complicated, right? And when I brought it to principals, like they looked overwhelmed and stressed out by that proposal because I didn't fully understand just how complicated their master schedules were. And they'd done such hard work trying to create distance learning schedules that really maximized every moment and really delivered as much education to students virtually as they possibly could. That for me to say, just do this thing really meant, you know, this elaborate thing that had been built was gonna have to be completely retooled. So it was partly recognizing that it's more complicated than you think it is when you first look at it. It's even more complicated when you're working with a bunch of overachievers who are really social justice driven because they want it to be perfect and they want every child's needs to be met at all moments. And we're gonna have to kind of work with our team to be like, this is not the time of perfection. This is the time of flexibility, of trying things, of keeping it simple so that we can experiment and make changes without it destroying us. And of recognizing the fact that the team is tired. And one of the most important points of the pandemic is that we all arrive at the end of it together. And we've spent too much money and time training our teachers and our administrators to burn them out. And when we looked at the survey data, part of what we saw there was a kind of distrust, right? Do you want to come back to campus? We are not sure we want to come back to campus. And that's partly because I don't think they're certain that whatever we come up with in terms of that return to campus won't be exhausting, because everything has been exhausting, right? And then for families, you know, they have to trust us, they have to trust the health department, they have to trust the CDC. And I don't know that they have a lot of great reasons from their lens to trust the health department and the CDC. They're much more leery of these recommendations than a lot of other communities, which means we have to take time to build that trust relationship with them, to make them confident that we do have their children's well-being as central, and that we are more than capable of executing on all the layers of safety that we're describing. But we're gonna have to take some time to do that communicating, to build their confidence in what we're proposing. And at the same time, build teachers' confidence that whatever we're gonna do next is gonna be doable.
And the one thing that I'll add to that gets to a question that is also on the document is about like, what is our plan for communication? And if you're on the presentation, it's on slide 32, but really this week and the week we get back from spring break, we're introducing this plan to all stakeholder groups, starting with you, then starting right now. As we introduce it to each stakeholder group, we're soliciting feedback. So we appreciate this feedback. And I wanna hear from our board members. And then we're gonna be finalizing the plan a couple weeks later. So it actually takes time. If you're going to ask, if you're gonna share it with stakeholders and not just share a plan that's ready to go and you just want a rubber stamp, if you really are gonna ask them to consider it and give their feedback and then we're going to take it and under consideration and to revise it, that takes time. But as Kenny says, that also builds trust. And it gives us time to build the on-ramp to what is, as she said, more complicated than you realize. Like it was hard to turn it off. It's going to be even harder to get it back moving. And my metaphors are all mixed, but you know what I mean. Would another board member, anyone else want to weigh in or articulate their concern, questions, ideas?
Just so we're good, aware of time, you know, we'll take just two or three more minutes to, so if there is one more board member that wants to add and then you can respond, that would be great.
I don't have a concern. I just really appreciate that flexibility is on there because I really feel what I saw was happening in, you know, Manhattan Beach. It was like you had to make a decision whether you were going to start or not. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's really unfair. And this is, you know, to a lot of privileged people. And I really think to be able to have that opportunity to be like, hey, I want to see how things go and have the opportunity to change my mind is really important. And like you said, you know, every family's got so many different working parts, and we may not be able to appreciate all the complexities, but to understand that, you know, someone can change their mind, I think is huge. And I think is a great way to build some of that trust. So to have flexibility as one of your, you know, the four core things, I think is amazing and really forward thinking.
I wanted to add in that kids are coming to our campuses already. We are having small groups of students with exceptionalities come during this April period when we will be planning for our May visits. That will help us understand what we have right and what we have wrong. During the April period, we will also have teachers come and reacclimate themselves to working in their own classrooms. Many of our teachers have never entered their own classroom. They're new to us. They've never set up their stuff. They have barely set foot on our campuses. I mean, there's a lot of welcoming that we have to do with people. And everything that you've seen, and I just want to go back to our strategic priorities benchmark chart and remind you that what you have seen in terms of success this year with attendance, with grades, with the number of people we've been able to pull in to enroll for next year, despite the fact that we cannot tour our campuses, everything that has been successful about this year has been the result of this level of kind of careful planning and acknowledgement about how things can just completely fall apart when we don't think through every little piece, including, and I just wanted to chime in that probably more than anybody in this organization, I've been scouring the written comments, not just the percentages that Danielle showed you, but for every single person represented in those data points. There are also paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of written comments communicating serious fears, serious reticence about continuing to work with this organization, serious questions about our judgment. And so, you know, I do understand because I watch the news and all the time, and I'm like watching all these kids go back in their classroom and stressing out, like, let's get our kids back. But guess what? We're going to. We have to do it well and we have to do it right. And, you know, that's where I think we are with this plan. So.
So So I know we have to wrap up. Thank you for the additional time on this agenda item. This isn't the last you're going to hear about this. We'll talk to you more about it in the at the next board meeting. And I predict there'll also be some communication in between. Please reach out to me, Beth, Cami, as if you have questions or ideas or thoughts that you want to share. And thanks, I think a special thanks to Cami for doing all the writing and all the research and also beating the drum of sustainability, because the first version of this plan is, let's just do it. We could do it. We'll do it. We might die in the process, but we'll do it. And Cami has been really insistent that we all have to make it through this to the other side. It doesn't do us any favors if we burn ourselves out on the way.
Thank you. Thank you, team. And thank you all for the feedback. We are really running late, so we're going to jump into the math presentation with Charity. Charity, if you would like to share your screen, that would be great.
Yes, I would. Thank you so much. Good evening, board. I am Miss Rock. For those of you who don't know me, although all of your faces look very familiar, I want to just tell you how excited I am to be here. And I'm joined by the middle school math coaches. That's Christina and Tiffany. We're also joined by high school department head Amy Johnson and Kristen Donahue, who is one of our math teachers. And we really want to highlight ECS Math. And we're super excited to show you the wonderful things taking place in our classrooms. And as always, we're connecting to our priorities in everything we do. So you're gonna see these visible as we walk through all of our work. And we wanna start with the what, how, and why of 2021 ECS Math. I love this what, and I hope you do too. The what is increased student success in solving never before seen problems. I'm gonna let that sink for a second, okay? And how are we gonna achieve this? We're gonna achieve this by increasing high impact metacognitive routines in not one and not two, but all math classrooms. And why? Because it's imperative that our students are prepared to navigate, dare we say, thrive the 21st century. And critical thinking and problem solving skills are a must. You're gonna see this how. We're really focusing on the how because the how is what drives the what and the why, okay? So this is the action plan. And you'll see the how is actually our goal. This is the action. We're gonna increase implementation of high impact metacognitive routines in all math classrooms. And of course we have a measure of success attached to it. And we'll look at these growth indicators a bit later in the presentation. But right now we're really looking at the metacognitive routines. And first of all, what does it mean to increase implementation of metacognitive routines? And how does it tie to our priorities? Well, if we're looking at deepening reading apprenticeship by focusing on disciplinary literacy, highlighting math, in order to get here, students must live here, okay? And reading apprenticeship focuses on preparing students to take academic risk, be willing to dive into unknown territory, and see themselves as capable of doing hard things and to persist in the face of a challenge. When I read these three bullet points, it does something to me because that is such a beautiful thing. But how does this take place? This takes place when our students have metacognitive conversations because they build curiosity and self-direction. Metacognitive conversation asks students to be aware of and interested in their learning processes. It normalizes struggle by recasting challenges as shared, manageable, and meaningful to tackle. And so we set out to increase metacognition, but we learned pretty quickly that's a very broad statement. So we started to really think about how can we name it? How can we measure it? And so we moved from increasing metacognition to increasing metacognitive routines. Now these routines weren't just made up, but these routines were gathered and named when we're looking at our fantastic teachers and we're looking at those routines that are creating space for students to truly think, and we named them. And we said, now that we have a name to them, we can identify them and help grow them, right? But when once again, we didn't see everything we were hoping to see. So we had to move a little bit deeper. Once again, deeper, not wider, and increase high impact metacognitive routines. So let's look a little bit closer at that. So, oh boy, look at here. So metacognitive routines. These are some of the wonderful routines we saw in a lot of successful classrooms. The teacher was chunking the task. The teacher poses questions. Students have that independent think time, and students are making thinking visible. So once we name the routines, why aren't we seeing it in every classroom, right? So where's the disconnect? And the disconnect came because they were not all high impact. The task matters. So when we say teacher chunks task, what is this task? Is the task a procedural list of equations to solve, or is it an engaging task where students can really dive into it and really practice those critical thinking skills, right? And also chunking. Chunking is different than step-by-step. So these are how we change them to high impact. I want you to imagine a step-by-step with the teacher saying, first do this, then do this, third this. How much thinking is taking place versus chunking a task and having students truly engage and unpack it, right? So this is how we had to move one to high impact. And teacher poses questions, the question matters. It's huge, right? You can ask a surface level question, or you can really implement questions that allow students to really pause and think and push their thinking. So we're spending a lot of time of not just recognizing what these routines are, but what the high impact routines are, okay? And when we change from metacognition to metacognitive routines to high impact metacognitive routines, this is where we see all three of our priorities show up, because we're now having classes with equity, students have a voice, and students are truly given opportunities and space to be critical thinkers. And so here at ECS, we have lots of supports in place to increase these high impact metacognitive routines. Each time I'm thinking, I'm just going to say high impact, but I love this whole piece, and I'm going to keep saying high impact metacognitive routines. So our students, our teachers and students are supported with classroom visits with focused feedback, one-on-one coaching support, aligned department PDs, cross-campus collaboration, and CZI design group. In this space today, we're going to focus on these three. And I am going to pass the mic to Tiffany, and she's going to talk to us more about our aligned math department PD.
So in supporting growth across sites, we've had alignment. We'll be sharing a clip of what our focus department meetings have looked like at each site, and to frame our discussions with teachers on the power of embedding intentional high impact questions, all the math teachers read this article that you see here. Want to know what your brain does when it hears a question? And I know the article is linked. I believe Rock will be sharing the presentation later. But we'll be taking a glimpse into our department meetings after teachers had a chance to read this article.
Can you hear the sound?
We're gonna really make sure we stay present. I know.
I guess he really values the questions you ask. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking about. Like the questions you ask for your students are really valuable because you don't want them to deviate too much. You want them to go through a certain way. So that's what I was thinking about, like just thinking about your questions before you have the lecture. Mm. Yeah, a popcorn. Kristen.
I was also noticing how saying your brain is really only thinking of one question at a time. So when you're posing questions to your students, it's important to make sure that they're really focusing on the thing that you want them to be thinking about instead of just asking like kind of a bunch of things.
I have the first reaction that Andrea had too. I was like, did a man write this? Because women can definitely want the graph. Okay. And then I was like, I was thinking about like how I introduce questions to students, and I don't know, maybe when I start introducing the question and
I want you to think for a moment, what is the most effective question you ask to surface student learning?
Oftentimes I find myself asking like, okay, well, how do you note that? Or, okay, well, can you expand on that? Or like just asking for proof, like how do you know? Like what from the text made you know that? Things of that sort.
Yeah, good. And that's what Dr. Brooks wrote on here too. How do you know? Lakey shared, what do you think? Not what do you know? Yeah, that thinking piece, not just like, what do you know? That's really good.
Thoughts after reading and then popcorn to someone else.
My initial thoughts are, this is only true if the person who is asked the question cares about the question. Mm. Popcorn Lee.
My initial thought is, I think this is true because we cannot multitask at all, but it's really down to the question itself. Like if the person who asks a question is understand their students like prior knowledge, like you cannot just ask something that they are not really know. Like you need to at least understand the.
Then share us what you were thinking. So this is kind of metacognition in the teacher's lens. So what was your reasoning for those particular questions that are attached to that task?
Working on like what are some good questions that I could ask them, and I came up with three to ask as part of the lesson. And then after looking at that article, I maybe
improve the questions I have for Slobot is using academic language to solve for a variable. And so in this, they're gonna be creating and solving an equation.
So in addition to seeing these department clips, Christina is going to share some of the wonderful opportunities we've had to do joint cross-campus collaboration.
Got so excited to start speaking. I forgot I was on mute. Always has to be one. So indeed, our cross-campus collaboration is a unique opportunity to leverage teacher expert from multiple sites. And the purpose is to engage in sharing, reflection, and resource development of lessons with embedded high impact metacognitive routines to best support our students. So in just a moment, Rock will be playing a clip of our experience.
And that moment has arrived.
I can go for six really quickly. We discussed how we are breaking down these real world context word problems for our students and focused on the ways that we're questioning and scaffolding their thinking so that they can explain their thinking and so that they can show their thinking. So we're just trying to be intentional about the questioning to scaffold towards them being able to break down the word problems.
Thank you, grade six. I really love that explaining and showing, right? Both of those pieces. So
looking at trying to find a way to have visuals. I know that Emily right now for our standard, she's used the hangers. And I guess that ECMI also is using it for the seventh grade team. I hadn't really seen hangers as much. So we were just conversing about how the hangers are working for the visuals. And that's just a way to have balanced equations for those that might not know I'm talking about with hangers, but.
We were mostly talking about ways that we all use earpods to increase student engagement. Garrett had a good idea that we haven't tried yet, but to use a collaborate board on Nearpod to pose a word problem that way and have kids put down like their notices, their wonders and stuff about the question before they solve it. And then also using the collaborate boards for kids to explain their reasoning. So Elizabeth and I appreciate everyone for bringing something to the table. So
and thank you so much, Christina. Now we'd like to introduce Ms. Donahue.
Hi everyone, I'm Kristen Donahue. I teach seventh grade at Inglewood. So this is an example of a task that I shared during that cross-campus PD that we just watched the video of. So after annotating the text, students used the information to solve the problem in their own way. And after they had their independent think time, then they shared in breakout groups and then we shared our whole class. So here are some different strategies that my students had come up with. Varied strategies result when the students are allowed the space to think about their own thinking and then apply their critical thinking to the task. So no strategies are prized over other ones. We really focus on coming up with different strategies and whatever works for your brain. So here's a short clip of what one of the students was explaining as we went through this.
Very nice. Anyone have a different strategy they would like to add on?
I don't know if mine was different, but I didn't use like no pictures. I just kind of just like wrote it down.
All right, Israel, so I just shared yours onto everyone's screen. Tell us why you took these steps.
Okay, so the 88 came from the seats in the theater, and there were four, and they were split by four sections. So 88 divided by four equals 22. And then for the each section with 14 red seats, so 22 minus 14 equals 8. And that's 8 blue seats in each section, or 8 times 4 equals 32 blue seats in the whole entire theater.
Hey, thank you, Israel. So a third strategy, and actually looks like... Very nice, very nice. Anyone have a different strategy they would like to add on?
Thank you so much, Kristen. And I don't know about you guys, but when I see these multiple strategies and not just one frame of thinking, looking at that teacher as the one sole source of information, that's the game changer. And this is proof that our students are thinking on their own independently. Thank you so much, Ms. Donahue.
Very nice.
And now we're going to move on to Amy Johnson. She's going to talk to us about some of our exciting work we've done with the CZI Design Group.
Hi, everyone. I was one of three of our ECS math teachers who was charged with the development and design of a student-facing tool that supports and measures students' metacognition and results in data that our students can use and our teachers can use in both real time and over long periods of time. And after working collaboratively in several development and design meetings, we piloted our ideas in our classrooms and we received some feedback. After all that, I think we were ready to show our colleagues what we had created for the students. And we wanted to share out some of the initial data that we had collected by using these student-facing tools. So last Friday, we invited all the math teachers and the ECS leadership to a CZI Math Showcase, where we shared out and celebrated these three student-facing metacognitive tools that we developed. And before Rock shares a clip of that event, I just wanted to add that I really appreciated the opportunities throughout the process of the CZI design group that I got to be in spaces where my colleagues and I were encouraged to spend like serious time and mental effort looking at how metacognition and the tenets of RA could be highlighted authentically in our math classrooms through high impact practices and tools. And it's our goal that all of our ECS students are given opportunities across all their classes and all disciplines to engage with these kind of tools and practices that support metacognition. Rock.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
As we go into this afternoon of
really looking at the exciting new work of math teachers that are your peers and your colleagues who are going into kind of a wobbly new place that we may have not been before, and just to celebrate the work and to learn from each other, all in this service of doing big, meaningful things.
Capture student metacognition. So that's just trying to capture their mathematical thinking in the moment, their processes, what are they doing to think through the problem, or whatever assignment you've given them. So this is mine. This is what I created. I tried to make something that was sustainable for me, pretty simple. So I have two different
part that said that metacognition refers to the processes used to plan, monitor, and assess our own understanding and performance. So when I started designing my task, I had some, I'll call them guiding questions. They were the questions that were just jumping around in my brain about what to do with this. Like, what is metacognition in math? And so I started hitting some of the research in math education journals about what is metacognition in math. How does it manifest itself in a math classroom? And then what sort of questions elicit metacognition?
So background information about my tool, that my two seventh grade classes in Inglewood participated in using this tool for about 8 weeks. Students would complete practice problems, which are auto-graded for them before plotting their understanding and answering questions that they have to the right. So they would have to answer, what is the pattern and mistakes that you've been making? What have you learned from your mistakes? And what do you need more practice on? And then they would also plot their understanding. The survey, like 3 weeks in, and that was about like 90% said that they liked it. And then the survey yesterday, can see they still have the majority of the class said that they have found it helpful in helping them think about their own thinking.
All right, thank you so much, Amy. Thank you. And we're moving on to growth indicators. So we're gonna look at NWEA and Student Math Identity Survey to really see how these.
Sorry to pause you. I see that Dr. Matthews has her hand up. I don't know if she's trying to.
Okay, yes.
Dr. Matthews, did you want to say something?
I think that was an accident. My apologies. Okay.
I apologize. I just wanted to make sure we were creating space. Sorry. Thank you.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to look at NWEA data and Student Math Identity Survey data. So when we look at the NWEA, this is Gardena, and we see growth, this red point. This is our sixth graders. They came in to us a little bit lower than the seventh graders. But what is remarkable is this growth we're seeing. We're not seeing the learning loss that is expected. And I really want to highlight our eighth graders here. Look at this growth here to here. Really catching up to the national norm in this space, which is absolutely incredible. And we're seeing the same thing show out at the Inglewood campus. Once again, we see growth from our seventh graders. And then we see our eighth graders really, really showing gains, which is the opposite of what we have been told would happen. So learning, true, genuine learning is actually taking place via screen. I'm excited to share this student math identity survey as well. So last year we asked students to talk to us about their confidence in solving never before seen problems. And this is sixth grade, seventh, eighth, and ninth, and it's pretty much a perfect staircase, which is telling us the more time you spend in math class, the less confident you are, which is the opposite effect that we want. So this is pretty devastating, and it's not unique to ECS. This is the norm across the country. What we found this year, for this is our Gardena, we see the opposite effect. We actually are seeing a shift, and our eighth graders are showing more confidence. If we look at the Inglewood, this is kind of a mixed bag, right? So we're seeing here, this is our highest. And if we look at high school, we also see these shifts. It's not that perfect staircase. What does this mean? This is exciting for me because this is letting us know that grade level and your age is not a direct indicator of your math identity, your positive math identity. There's other factors in place that are shifting. And so we're super excited about this. This is a huge win. And we want to see as we continue to increase all students' math identity and confidence. Okay, and finally, this is students' effort today. I really focused on the yellow piece. I guessed on most of the questions. You can see we're at 1.7, 1.9, and 6.4. That's the lowest piece of the pie. And in this space, distance learning, what our ECS students are showing is perseverance. And that is a testament to the community and what our teachers bring to the table, and students truly feeling wanted and cared for, that they're still pushing themselves in this space. I believe this is my favorite piece of data here, of just that perseverance and drive that our students are still holding on to. And in closing, next steps, we're gonna continue going deeper, not wider, because we truly understand that students' ability to think critically and give those space to actually think and have genuine opportunities for learning, that's our number one goal here. That's where the big bucks lies. And distance, hybrid, and face-to-face, how does metacognition look in these different spaces, right? That's what we're looking at, the transition. And finally, big pictures, backwards planning. I'm working really closely with Danielle, and she's taken me through a series of wonderful questioning where we're really truly thinking about where we want to be in 4 years, 3 years, two, and what we have to do right now, continue to do and make adjustments to make sure we get there. And that is it for us math crew. And thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you all so much. I actually want to propose a quick shift to our plan, because I'm envisioning that a lot of our math teachers who are here and Charity's team may want to leave before we are done with all of our voting processes, so they won't be here for our appreciations. So I wanted to take a minute to do our appreciations now, and we'll rush through the last part of our board meeting and get those votes done. So just to open up to this amazing group of people who presented today and hear from our board members and other staff members, please.
Well done. The enthusiasm, the passion, you guys are awesome. How you present, what you present, and your dedication is fantastic. And I'd make a suggestion, since we didn't have time to ask questions to get feedback, can that form be used from the first session on the second session so that they have an opportunity to respond to questions or concerns? That's a question for Naz. Can we use that form to ask questions and give feedback so that they have an opportunity to respond to anything that we'd like to ask?
Absolutely. So if you guys continue to add questions to that board document that Danielle shared, we'll share it back out with the board members. We've been answering some of the questions about financial ramifications and such, but feel free to ask more questions and we'll continue to answer them. More appreciations for this team of presenters.
Something like this, I think, just makes the students not afraid to learn. And that's what I love. I love the enthusiasm. And I could see a child who was reticent at first kind of jumping in the game and getting excited about learning math. I love it. And thank you. Thank you for your hard work.
Danielle, I think you're on mute. Oh,
thank you. Sorry, I was double muted. I want to just say, last year when we said we're going to do reading apprenticeship as a singular focus for all content areas, all grade levels, our math teachers said, yes, we're in, we'll do it. And then they gave us some really critical feedback as we went into it. Like, RA it's not that simple to do reading apprenticeship in a math context. You said it would work, and it may, but it's not that simple. And I just wanna acknowledge the group of teachers here and all of the math teachers for sticking with it this year. And as you could see from that CZI design group that Amy highlighted at the end, not only did ECS math teachers stick with it and prove that there is integration possible between reading apprenticeship and math or math instruction, but that CZI design group, ECS teachers are actually contributing to the framework of reading apprenticeship now that we're giving back to West Ed in a way that will contribute to math instruction at ECS and beyond. So I feel really proud and grateful.
I want to do three very big appreciations. One of Danielle, Cami, and Beth for the amount of work that went into giving us such a thoughtful proposal that's really responding to the needs of our community. Two, to Dr. Betsy Hamilton for your appreciation and recognition of the work that went into this and the impact that it's going to have on the community. I think it was really neat that the plan they proposed very much resembled your plan, your one of your two plans that you pitched. And I'm grateful for the fact that we have the support of our board to approach this work in this way. So thank you to our board for having trust in us. And we hope to be able to continue to gain your support in this process. And finally, Charity and math team leaders. Charity, your energy is so overwhelmingly inspiring, and it makes me so excited to see what the impact that you're having it has been, but also to hear from your team of leaders that you are engaging and developing, and also hearing the space that you're creating for their voices. So thank you for this.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure, and have a good night, everyone.
Thank you. If anybody else wants to go, it's a couple of quick votes now at this point, so understandable. So with that, I'm going to share a screen. Anthony, do you want to take?
Sure. As we have done in the past, I ask for a motion to approve the consent items A through H. If we can get a motion and if there are any discussions or questions, concerns about them, we'll address them.
Motion to approve consent items A through H.
That's Kennedy. Thank you. Do I have a second?
This is Huey. I move that we accept. I second that motion.
Thank you, Huey. Okay, so any questions regarding these consent items, concerns, discussion? Can you scroll back up to A and just slowly go through so everyone has a chance to ensure that they see each item? Thank you. Go ahead.
Just opening for discussion or questions.
Okay. With that, then I will ask Ken. If you're on mute, board members, please take.
Oh, sorry. Aye. Ken, aye.
And Denise.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Nina.
Aye.
Thank you. Huey?
Aye.
Nadeau?
Aye.
Thank you. Kennedy?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
Anthony? Aye. The approval of consent items A through H has been done. And then we have action items that we need to walk through and discuss. So first, let me ask, do we have a motion to approve action item A, which is approve ECS school reopening resolution, March 2021?
A motion to approve it.
Thank you, Denise. Do I have a second?
I second it. Madhu.
Madhu, thank you, Madhu. Okay, Farnaz, did you want to discuss action item A with the group, give some insight?
This is a document that needed to be updated based on the fact that we had previously said that we were going to be closed for a period of time. So it was required for us to update as we plan to transition back to reopening our schools. Jeremiah went through the due diligence and research to prepare this document based on the recommendations from LACO and other partners. And I think it reflects the shift in practice during this time.
Anyone have any questions, concerns, comments regarding?
Yeah, I this is Ken. I have a couple, or at least the language in item one.
Do you want to open that up, Farnaz?
Ken, go ahead and explain what you were saying. I'll try to pull it up.
Well, the wording is that the ECS shall be allowed to open should the chartering authority, so on, so on, so on, direct or recommend the opening. I would amend that to include permit the opening.
As of now, the charter authority has not prevented. It's always been on a recommendation to date. So permission, that's why it's not referring to it as permission so much as that, Ken. But I'm trying to find where exactly that is.
It's item number one. It just says that, you know, you're allowed to open as long as you're directed or recommended to open.
Mm-hmm. So your recommendation is to add permitted.
Yes.
That seems like an easy enough shift to make. I'm sorry, Jeremiah isn't here to walk us through his reasoning for the language. I think he did get guidance on this. He had his second vaccine today, so he's okay.
Do we make a note of that if we're going to approve it tonight?
Yes, we could make a note of that. And this is all being recorded, so we can shift based on that recommendation. Ken, did you have any other recommendations?
No.
I apologize that I'm not able to say where the direct guidance came from to make these shifts.
And Ken, you said you had a few. I just want to make sure.
I'm just not clear what the purpose of this is. I mean, normally I would think it would be normal that the board would either approve the reopening or not, rather than just sort of giving you sort of saying you're allowed to open.
I think, Ken, the part of the reason why there's a little bit of permission given to the CEO in this instance is that this is a constantly changing environment, and at any moment there could be a surge and then we would need to reclose. It's sort of for those reasons, giving us the capacity to make decisions at the moment has been the way that this document has trended this whole period of time. And that's why it initially had some permissions in it for the CEO and team to make decisions and recommendations.
Seems unusual to me.
Betsy, did you want to add something?
No, it would be helpful to know that similar resolutions, I know the 80 superintendents in the Los Angeles County, this was discussed in several meetings with Los Angeles County Office of Ed, and draft language was shared with us to bring a resolution to our boards. This was back on March, in March of 2020, we did bring the resolution to our board and they supported it. And I had to utilize it most recently because of the rapidity of change going on with reopening schools. And we've had 4 board meetings in a row, 1 each week. And it's just still not enough time to really make decisions that have to be made. So that's part of the purpose that it's been for us in just regular public school districts, not charters.
But has your board given the staff the authority to make that decision?
Yes, there's a lot of language in it. I could share it with Farnaz if that would be helpful. The idea it allows generally actions to be taken, entrusting the staff to take actions that need to be taken to operate. At the beginning of the pandemic, it was more around expenditures that we wouldn't go through the normal bidding process because certain things had to be taken care of right away. But there have been numerous instances during the course of the pandemic where we've not business as usual, I would say, where we have to make decisions quickly and implement things quickly.
So there's a lot in this, Ken, that's about being able to shift based on the, to implement directives from relevant authorities. So that's why initially they shared this draft language with us. We had guidance from LACO and from CCSA to implement this language. It's not something that we crafted on our own.
I see. Okay.
So Anthony, at this point, I think maybe open for a vote or?
Yes.
Are we voting on it as is or with the recommended change?
Is it important for you to add that one shift in number one? It's I think it would be fine to add that to number one.
I mean, we can do that unless you, subject to your coming back with some compelling reason that it shouldn't be there.
That's fine to add permit the opening. I'm fine with adding that. Let's go ahead and add that. So just mark the language in the recording that we're going to be adding direct, permit, or recommend the opening in number one on page 2. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ken, for your comments, and thank you, Bessie, for your insight.
Sure.
So, Ken?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Huey?
Aye.
Nadu?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Action item A to approve has been passed. I think we have a B. And so I think most of you are on the call and heard Tracy go through her information regarding the salary. And so if I can get a motion to approve B, and then we can open up for discussion.
Anthony, I move that we approve the revised teacher salary schedule.
Thank you, Zena,
I second.
Zena, thank you. So open to questions, comments, concerns. One quick question, if I saw it correctly, was it about $322,000 added to the budget between the three?
I think it was a little less than that, if I remember correctly. I can try to pull up Tracy's presentation again.
And I'm just curious, that was added to the budget already and reviewed and...
It has been added to our draft budget as it stands right now, the amount that it would impact the budget based on the amount of additional revenue we're forecasting for the next 3 years. we have room for this addition in addition to other expenditures associated with additional aftercare, school safety, health, and because there's a lot that we're projecting to add in the next few years, and there's room for this in our budget. First of all, this supports us in our efforts to be compliant, and it ensures that we'll be able to retain strong teachers and recruit strong teachers. In recent years, we have lost a few teachers in the recruitment efforts to districts that pay more. We've been on the mid to low range for new teacher salaries. This will put us probably, I think a lot of school districts are all gonna come at the same level because it's such a big jump for everyone. It'll be hard to go higher than that at this time, my projection. But
I fully support it. I just was curious if, you know, we didn't see that analysis per se, and I was just want to make sure that the board and those on the call understand that it has been analyzed and understood.
Absolutely. Yeah, Anthony, the 322 sounds about right. And of course, that's based on our current staff, which is, you know, an estimate. Of course, we're still going to hear back from people, but.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy. This is the exact number. So right there, the combination of those three amounts.
Yeah, I think it's about 322.
Thank you. So vote on this one.
Ken?
Aye.
Denise? Off mute?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Zena?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Huey?
Aye.
Nadu?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. The approval of the revised salary schedule has been met. So we can move on to upcoming dates and announcements.
So I just want to let you guys know that I'm sorry that we're not able to meet the goal of reducing the time of our meetings at this time. It feels that, you know, as Betsy said, they're having meetings on a weekly basis. With the amount of change that we're managing at this moment, it's highly probable that we're going to have another board meeting very soon to approve the ECHS Gardena lease, probably to do my evaluation, which is required at this time, and then also to do any additional approvals of our plans for this time. So the date that we have next is May 25th, but it's likely that we'll be reaching out to you with a doodle to schedule additional meetings, probably two before this school year is done. And I apologize for the additional time that this is going to take. And with that, we do have the committee meetings on calendar tomorrow. We also have a Menlo Charter Properties Board meeting, where we're going to be reviewing the plan associated with ECHS Gardena for anyone who's interested. And that's all I have to share. So thank you.
Okay. So we'll move to move to adjourn to the meeting. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn.
And I second it. Thank you, Denise.
Okay. So Ken.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Huey.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Betsy.
Aye.
Anthony, aye. So the meeting has been adjourned, and we did our appreciations before. So thank you, everyone, for all you have done this evening and all that you do. And wish you a wonderful rest of your evening.
Thank you all for being here. We really appreciate you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.